Thanks, Pete. That was a very generous, overly generous introduction. I was expecting the pun, I was expecting like the diss, but it never came. It was very nice. So, as Pete said, I'm Pete, and I know most of you from looking out here, but for those I don't know, I'm married to Anna, stunner on the front row, and then we live locally, we live up the road, and this is, have you ever fallen off this before?
Yeah.
This is absolutely lethal. Who designed that? I work in politics, I work for a Labour MP, and done so for the last sort of 3 years or so. But as Pete was saying as well, we're doing a series, he kicked it off last week, Songs from the Front Line. And basically how Pete described it to me when he asked me to speak on it was that it's looking at threads that run through the Psalms. So rather than unpacking individual Psalms as such, we're looking at threads that run through it. And they've asked me to speak on Thanksgiving as a thread. So that's where I'm going. And Pete kicked it off last week with a sort of theological framework that we can read the Psalms through and understand them within, which was really, really helpful. I would recommend that you check out the podcast because it really was good. Mostly stolen material, but it was good. I'm going to just basically do a really quick recap in like one or 2 minutes of what Pete took 45 minutes to say. So either I'm really woefully inadequate with this description or he was extremely waffling last week. But basically, anyone who's been here for a while will know that sort of Pete describes the biblical narrative as from creation to decreation to recreation. And basically what that means is that creation is as it sounds. It's the picture of the Garden of Eden. It's that all is well, that God has made it, he's pleased, it is good. All is right between God and man, and between man and man. And that's the picture of creation. But then, obviously, sin enters the world, and that's decreation. That's when things begin to go wrong, things begin to break down, suffering and broken relationships. And the relationship between God and man is broken, and also between man and man as well. So that's that section. And then the rest of the story, which we are a part of, is the recreation story. And that's God's redemptive work, that's his salvation, that's Jesus. And we are part of that now. And what Pete was painting for us last week was a picture that the Psalms, they span that whole spectrum. They're not just groups of Psalms that are kind of thanksgiving or confession or lamentation. They are those. But they're also they also spread this spectrum, which is the story of the Bible, which is, I guess, the story of human experience. And in doing that, he's attributed other tags. So there's orientation, disorientation, and reorientation. So orientation is, again, when all is well, and we sing songs and worship, and we relate to God out of a place of wellness and contentness. Then there's disorientation. That's when, you know, the proverbial hits the fan. It's stuff goes wrong in life. We lose someone we love. We lose our job, whatever it might be. It's a tough time. And the beauty of the Psalms is that they give us a way to express ourselves in that time. John Hughes, Pete's dad, was speaking to the guys this weekend. And he just said, really simply, and I love it, he said, "Let the Psalms give you a voice. Let the Psalms give you a voice." And I just feel that if anyone's in that moment of disorientation at the moment, where things aren't right and things are painful, I'd really encourage just to dig into the Psalms and open them up on a daily basis and let them give you a voice of how to worship at that time and how to be yourself but still worship God and not ignore the pain. And also, just to say on this period of disorientation, that whilst we don't want to wallow in it, we don't always welcome it, it's not something we should try and rush on from. Always. I know from my experience, I've had most of my life's been amazing, but there was certainly a 2 to 3 year period where it got very, very tough, and I sort of didn't really cope with it very well, and became, you know, I suffered with depression during that time, and it became very difficult. But looking back, it's the most valuable period of my life so far, and that's when really God has dug the deepest foundation. So if you're in a time like that, don't view it as an invalid time, that it's like you're a lesser Christian for being in that time. God will be doing stuff that is deep and meaningful. So I just encourage you not to rush on for it. And just to finish the picture, the third one, so from orientation to disorientation to reorientation, and that's where, again, where God is taking us out of the other side of that period of disorientation where his redemptive work comes into play, and we sing psalms of thanksgiving, much like in orientation, but different, because we've experienced the saving work of God in that place, and there's a take on a different tone. But one of, just on a general note about the psalms, I think what I love about them is that they really draw us into authenticity and into honesty. They do that, I think, by giving us permission, like I was sort of just saying. They give us permission to be in orientation. You know, let's not shy away. If our life is great, let's give credit to God and let's go for it. Let's not be British. Let's go for it, of which I'm the most guilty. But like, let's go for it and let's celebrate and not shy away from what God has done. Same with reorientation, but also in disorientation, these psalms give us permission. They show us a way to be in that time and to seek God and to worship Him in that time. Thanksgiving is one of those ways. And I just want to tell you a story about two people that I don't know very well, actually, but I met them 2 summers ago. And when I was thinking about Thanksgiving, these are the two people that came to mind first. It was at a summer festival in Soul Survivor that I've worked at most summers for a few years. And these two people just came into the tent that I was working in one morning. And immediately there was something different about them. They just, they kind of like had life in their eyes. So they came up to me and we had a chat, and we chatted for sort of 10, 15 minutes. And the two guys were, there was a gentleman in his sort of 50s, and with him was a guy in his early 20s with cerebral palsy. And as I said, they just were so alive when they came in. I was really drawn to them. So we chatted for about 10, 15 minutes. And then basically the reason they came in, it sounds like I had a really odd job, but they're signing out keys to the disabled toilet, basically. So I was issuing this key, and I gave this, and let's call him Mike, the younger guy. He really wanted to sign for this key himself, so I gave the sheet out, but basically he couldn't reach the, it was on like a desk, and I was on the other side of that, he couldn't reach it, basically. He couldn't lift his arms above his sort of waist. So I took it around the inside of the desk, signed it, 3 P's, got his key, and off they went, and I didn't really think too much more about it. Three days later, on the third day after the morning meeting, they came. No, they didn't. The older guy came bursting in to the tent that I was working in, and he was like, "Pete, do you remember me?" And I was like, "Of course I remember you. How's it going? How's your week?" And I saw that he was crying, and he was like, "Pete, the most extraordinary stuff has been going on. The most extraordinary thing has just happened in that main meeting." I said, "Tell me about it." And he said, "Well." Do you remember Mike that I was with? And I said, of course, yeah, absolutely. And he said, well, the thing is with Mike, I've been caring for him for nearly 20 years. I mean, that sentence alone had me. like, that is extraordinary. But he then said that in those 20 years, Mike has never let him pray for him for healing. In all of those 20 years. And I was so intrigued. I was like, why is that? And he said, the thing is about Mike, and what Mike said to him when he offers to pray for him, he said, I don't want prayer. And the reason is that when his grandparents saw how hard it was for his parents to look after him, sort of a couple of years into his life, they put all of their money and they put all of their energy into establishing a school for children with cerebral palsy. And in the subsequent 15 years or so, hundreds, if not thousands, of children had gone through this school. And the whole purpose of this school is to give life in all its fullness to the children of cerebral palsy, and to give them everything that they could possibly have, and to give the families respite in that time, the much-needed respite that they had seen. And Mike's answer to, "Would you? Can we pray for you to take away your cerebral palsy?" is no. I'm thankful because my cerebral palsy has changed the life of hundreds of other children. and in that place that clearly isn't easy, you know, he's saying it's a blessing and it's been tough, but I am grateful and I'm thankful and I consider it a blessing that my life has changed the life of hundreds of thousands of other kids. And I was in pieces, and so was this guy. It was a nice moment. And he said that tonight, this morning, he let me pray for him. And And I was like, you know, tell me more. And he said, not for full healing again. He said, all that Mike wants to be able to do is to raise his hands in worship, above his head in worship, like all the other kids have been able to do. And that's the one thing he wanted to be able to do, is to give glory to God and to praise him by raising his hands above his head. And in the process of that prayer time, I don't know if it was instant or whatever, Mike could wave his hands above his head. And you remember I was saying, you can even sign for that key. And this is what the carer had come to tell me. And I have never seen a picture of thanksgiving in my life like what was written on his face. And luckily enough, I had one shift off that week, and it was that evening. And I went down to the Big Top to find Anna and where friends were sat. And they happened to be sat literally right next to these two. And anyway, I walked in and the worship began. Not related. They started to worship, and I didn't know that they were going to be sat there, but Mike was there with his arms, like he was fist pumping, you know, he was pumping the air. It was extraordinary. It was utterly extraordinary. I still, you know, you don't believe it until you see it, but it was this extraordinary moment. And right in front of him was his carer dancing around, like just dancing. And I've never seen such a picture of thanksgiving and jubilation as that moment right there. And I cried for about 4 days. I mean, I don't think I sang a single song. It was really ugly. But the reason I tell you this story is because, A, I think it's great, and it shows God's power, but it also shows two types of thanksgiving. And the first is thanksgiving that's not chosen. It's an overflow. It comes pouring out of you. You know, you can't help it. I'm thinking Johnny Wilkinson drop goal, 2003 World Cup final. For those of you who are watching, amazing moment. Can't help it. You run around the sitting room. But also in the carer, what I saw in his face when I see him dancing, that's an overflow. That's not a choice. That's not hard. That's an overflow, and it's a response to what God has done. The other one, and I guess you could call that either thanksgiving from orientation or reorientation. In this case, it was reorientation. But the other one is the thanksgiving of choice. And the thanksgiving is hard and painful, and it's a discipline, ultimately. And that's what you see in Mike, I think, in the story, that he, you know, let's not pretend it wasn't hard, but he found a way to thank God out of that place, and it changed his life and others' lives ultimately. I'm going to talk about the second one, basically. Let me read a psalm, Psalm 56. This clock is really disconcerting. I've waffled already. Psalm 56 says this, I think this is NIV. Be merciful to me, my God, for my enemies are in hot pursuit. All day long they press their attack. My adversaries pursue me all day long, in their pride many are attacking me. Verse 5. All day long they twist my words. All their schemes are for my ruin. They conspire, they lurk, they watch my steps, hoping to take my life. This is not a Johnny Wilkinson 2003 moment. This is painful. This is life in threat. This is hard moment. Verse 10, you skip to that. Goes on to write, in God whose word I praise, in the Lord whose word I praise, in God I trust and I'm not afraid. What can man do to me? I'm under vows to you, my God. I will present my thank offerings to you. For you have delivered me from the death and my feet from stumbling, that I may walk before God in the light of life. You know, this is far from a victory song. You know, there's other psalms of orientation or reorientation that are, you know, celebrations coming out of battle. And that's a type of thanksgiving. This is a thanksgiving shown in this psalm that is out of a context that's hard and difficult, but is chosen. And ultimately, I think, before the end, you know, you sense some release in it by the end of the psalm. And so that's what I'm going to talk about. Thanksgiving is a choice. Thanksgiving is from disorientation. And at least in my view, disorientation doesn't always have to be dramatic. Like, it doesn't have to be that somebody that you love has died, or that you've lost your job, or you've been diagnosed with some illness. Those are times of disorientation. But I think there's a much more subtle type too. And that's something I really think affects our generation, which is this sort of the disorientation of the everyday, of the kind of the mundane. If you think about the Israelites, when they're taken out of their land, the initial bit would have been dramatic. It would have been brutal. They would have lost people they loved. And it would have been painful for those reasons. But after that, when it dust settles, they would have been out of their land. They would have been a bit confused. They would have been, well, where's our identity now? What's God doing? You know, and it's not so dramatic, but it's still disorientating. And I think for our generation, we were talking about this at the weekend, that in our generation, we've been told we can change the world. And there's all these avenues that we can do it. You know, there's so many jobs that we can do out there. And I've talked to so many people in London who just feel really disorientated, like, I don't really know what I'm meant to do with my life. I don't know how I'm going to change the world. I'm meant to, but I don't really know how. And I don't know where my career's going. And it's certainly not going as quickly as this other guy's career. And all this sort of feeling of just disorientation. Why am I in London? It's really expensive in London. Why don't I go somewhere else? You know, all of this feeling. And actually, that builds a picture that's really quite tough to get through, actually. You don't have a life event to pin it down to, but you've got this kind of experience that's really unsettling and disorientating. So the Thanksgiving and disorientation that I want to talk about is about the dramatic, but it's also about the everyday. And so it's Thanksgiving for the everyday. I really believe that if we get this, it will be really transformative for us. And it talks about renewing the mind in scriptures. I really believe it will renew our mind. And specifically, I think it will release us into the vision of this church much more fully. The vision of this church is to recklessly give ourselves away to God, to each other, and to King's Cross. Recklessly give ourselves away to God, to each other, and to King's Cross. And I guess by recklessly, what we're saying is unreservedly, like with nothing held back, giving ourselves away to God. With nothing held back, giving ourselves away to each other here in these pews. With nothing held back, giving ourselves away to the area that we're in. And this isn't easy. And I guess I want to say if that way of living, if that culture is on the other side of a door, that Thanksgiving is one of the keys that will help us get through the door to living in that way. I believe it's something that will help release us into living like that. So I'm going to talk about two ways. I'm sorry, there's not 3.7, but I'll give you two ways. And the first of which is that Thanksgiving builds trust where the world teaches us to fear. Thanksgiving builds trust where the world teaches us to fear. And I think so often in times of disorientation, particularly of the everyday, we just seem quite predisposed and preconditioned to sort of see what we haven't got, what God hasn't done for us, supposedly, what prayers he hasn't answered. Where we might rather be, those adverts on the tubes on a Monday morning, they're a killer of some kind of idyllic island. It's very easy to see what we haven't got. And Peter always talks about, what have you got in your hand? Stop focusing on what you haven't got in your hand, what have you got in your hand? And when that becomes subtly our sort of posture in life, what it does is it breeds things in us. It breeds discontentment. I think it breeds distrust in God, and I think it breeds fear. And the beauty of Thanksgiving, I think, is that it begins to break down those things. So it begins to put contentment in where there's discontentment. It begins to build trust where there's been distrust, and it begins to build confidence in God where we've had fear. Imagine, if you will, just for a moment, that life is like a bed of soil. It's not as catchy as life is like a bed of chocolates, box of chocolates, but life is like a bed of soil. Imagine that. And that whatever we do, whether we like it or not, seeds will get planted in that bed of soil. Life events, whether you have a bad review at work, whether somebody does die that you love, whether you fail somehow, you screw up in your job, whatever it might be, you see someone else who's just going better at it and they're earning more money than you were, and you're confused as to why you're not. These plant seeds into that bed of soil that is our life. And the whole purpose, I think, of the discipline of Thanksgiving is to plant seeds of Thanksgiving into that soil. To the extent that they crowd out, they don't leave room for those other seeds to grow. Because the danger is that if we let those other seeds grow, which is easy to do, very subtle, that they begin to take a grip on our life and we begin to see God through a lens that isn't right, actually. And they can begin to dominate how we view life. So the discipline of Thanksgiving is about planting seeds. I don't know if you've ever heard the phrase, sow a thought and you reap an action, sow an action you'll reap a habit, so a habit, and you'll reap a lifestyle. I don't know who said it, but it's this is what it's all about. The discipline of thanksgiving is about sowing thoughts of thanksgiving through your day, and sowing actions of thanksgiving as well. And the idea is that we'll begin to, it's not something that's an instant fix, but if we begin to build a culture that's like that, and we begin to plant those seeds, we will reap a lifestyle that is content, and it's glad, and it's built on trust with God. This is the case, is constantly giving thanks to God is also constantly acknowledging his work in our life. Matt had the word earlier about coming up to the River Jordan, when the Israelites and the ark went and touched the edge of the waters and the water came back, they got to, imagine the scenes of celebration, the scenes of joy and thanksgiving. Well, when they got to the other side, they said, right, go back to the middle of the riverbed, pick up stones, and bring them to the other side, the promised side, and plant them there so that all would know. And you can read about this in Joshua 3 and 4. All would know for generations to come what the Lord had done in that day. And they would give thanks for generations to come because of what God had done in that day. And I guess on a mini scale, that's what we're doing. Don't go to the Thames necessarily, but like, this is a sense of what we're doing when we plant seeds of thanksgiving, when we constantly acknowledge God's work in our life and what he is doing. We're picking up rocks from the middle of the riverbed where he's done the miraculous, where he's worked. We're placing them on the promised side and so that we can see them, so that we remember them. If we do this, we build a culture of doing this, then we'll build a picture in our life of trust in God. We really will. We'll build a picture of trust. And a guy called Ralph Waldo Emerson, which is a great name, Ralph Waldo Emerson says this. He says, all I have seen teaches me to trust God, trust the Creator for all I have not seen. All I have seen teaches me to trust the Creator for all I have not seen. That's what we're doing when we're giving thanks. We're picking up those rocks and placing them down. We've seen God do this. He can do other stuff too. If turn with me to the Psalms as well now. What's really interesting, Psalm 136 to start with. What's really interesting with the Psalms, nearly always, it's not always, but nearly always, when this thanksgiving is almost tied to God's faithfulness. It's kind of like a statement of thanksgiving is just tied to a statement about his constantness or his faithfulness or his love enduring. And that's basically what we're talking about here. If you read Psalm 136, it's just the beginning, 1, 2, and 3. Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His love endures forever. Give thanks to the God of gods. His love endures forever. Give thanks to the Lord of lords. His love endures forever. Then goes on to verse 13. To him who divided the Red Sea asunder, his love endures forever, and brought Israel through the midst of it, his love endures forever. But swept Pharaoh and his army into the Red Sea, his love endures forever. To him who led his people through the wilderness, his love endures forever. Flick over, you can to Psalm 100. Shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth. Worship the Lord with gladness. Come before him with joyful songs. Know that the Lord is God. It is he who made us, and we are his. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name. For the Lord is good and his love endures forever. His faithfulness continues through all generations. There's so many more where that. I mean, Psalm 107 would be one. Psalm 92 would also be one. Looking at the time, we might not go there now. But you see, there's this connection right the way through the Psalms. This thread is about this thanksgiving overflowing and coming because of God's faithfulness. And that's what we're doing with the rocks. And it's difficult because if life is teaching us to be fearful, as I said at the beginning, it's too easy to see what God isn't doing. We need to fight for this, and we need to build this into our life. Anne Voskamp, who's written a very girly but a great book called 1,000 Gifts. Yeah, I couldn't say I read it. It's on the shelf, but it's Anna's. And it's like a bird's nest on the front and stuff. It's really cute. But she actually says some incredible stuff in it. And she says this. I think I absolutely love this. She says, all fear is the notion that God's love ends. All fear is the notion that God's love ends somewhere. that it doesn't reach that place that you need it to reach, that his faithfulness doesn't last to that degree that you need it to be to get through a period of time. So it says, all fear is the notion that God's love ends. And she goes on to say, endlessly counting God's gifts exposes that lie at the heart of all fear. All fear is the notion that God's love ends, but endlessly counting God's gifts, I mean, giving thanks, exposes that lie at the heart of all fear. Because God's love doesn't end. And that's what we're reading in the Psalms, isn't it? His resources never run dry. His faithfulness does reach that bit that you think it doesn't reach. And I wonder just whether, as I'm saying this now, there's part of you that there's some of you that just feel that actually you don't think that God's love is going to reach you in a place that you're at. Maybe you feel you've screwed up, or you're going on an adventure, but you're terrified because you're not sure his faithfulness is going to stretch, or you're struggling financially, you just don't see how the numbers add up. So your fear begins to build. Well, constantly giving thanks, putting down rocks in your life, will begin to build a picture of trust, and it will drive out fear in your life. It really will. So the first way, the one of two, that I believe Thanksgiving will release us into vision as church is because it builds trust when the world teaches fear. And I think fully embracing the vision of this church is gonna bring us face to face with fear all the time. I don't do it anywhere near enough, but it's going to, isn't it? And the thing is, if we are a church that is so conditioned, so used to giving thanks, and so accustomed and familiar with acknowledging God's work in our life, we'll be able to face that fear sort of straight on. And it's not that it doesn't exist, it will still exist, just as strong as it was before. But we've got a culture of trust built on thanksgiving that will allow us to face that fear straight in the face. I just also ask at this point, are there any areas of your life where, when I was talking about contentment earlier, where actually you're just not content, you're a bit pissed off, or whatever it is, like you're just not happy, and you're seeing what God hasn't done for you, for it, and you get that picture. I've had times in my life where I felt like that. God's just not doing this, not doing that. If that's you, I'd love to pray for you at the end for breakthrough and for release from that, because it really makes us small. It really holds us back. So second way we release, we reckless. Is because I think when we sow a thread of thanksgiving through every area of our life, and I mean like every area, the power comes with the more you do it. If you it's so hot up here, isn't it? I should have worn a white t-shirt. If we sow a thread of thanksgiving through every area of our life, relationships, your wardrobe, your bank accounts, everything that you have, then what I believe it does is it begins to defeat the power of or the concept of me. It begins to quieten it down. It begins to defeat the concept and influence of me, of my agenda, my money, my possessions, my career, my home, whatever it might be. I think it really begins to defeat it and quieten it and shut it up as an influence in our life. You see, thanksgiving not only acknowledges the gifts of God, but it gives ownership of them back to God. It's basically saying that when you praise God, when you thank him for everything that he's given you, that he's blessed you with, you're saying, then they're not mine, they're yours, and I thank you for that. They are gifts. And suddenly you see your wardrobe, not as, all yours, and you don't see your bank account and your money and your home as yours, and that you're clinging to it, and it's yours that you've got to build in some way. Anne Vos Campbell again says this: thanksgiving returns our world back to God. Thanksgiving returns our world back to God. Again, you see this time and time again through the Psalms. I'm just going to read some out. It would take too long to flick to them. But so the Psalms are always talking about God as a creator, as a sustainer, as the giver, as the author, And Psalm 54:4 says this: surely God is my help. The Lord is the one who sustains me. In Psalm 100, we were looking at, weren't we? Know that the Lord is God. It is he who made us, and we are his. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture. Psalm 139, absolute classic. But it builds this picture that God created it. He knows every inch of you, and every inch of you is his, ultimately. And What we're doing is we're saying that everything we've got, and we're offering it up, and we're saying, I give thanks for this, God. And all these things, our money, our clothes, our possessions, our houses, they're all His. And when we get this, we will be so released into recklessly giving ourselves away. These gifts, they are God's. Our possessions are God's. And when I say that, I could mean two things, couldn't I? When I say they are God's, there's God's with an apostrophe. In what I'm saying is that you've acknowledged that they're gifts and that they are God's, they belong to Him. And the other one is without apostrophe. And that is that they are God's, as in idols. And it's so easy, isn't it, that our things, they all have the potential to become God's without an apostrophe, to become idols. And I guess, as cheesy as it sounds, thanksgiving is putting the apostrophe in. Thanksgiving is saying, it's returning our stuff to Him and saying, it is all yours. It is all yours. And I don't know if as I'm saying that, whether any of you kind of like the heartbeats a bit quicker about a certain area of your life that you actually think, actually, I really haven't offered that up to God for a while. Maybe it's your career or whatever it might be. And I would just love again to pray for you at the end, or get someone to pray for you at the end, that you'd feel release. Because the danger, isn't it, that, because this is pretty countercultural to be giving everything up. And I think my experience, at least, I've only been here for 3 years. But in London, there's a culture of trying to build your own kingdom. There's a culture, and this is where I think it really hurts, is there's a culture of competition and comparison. And you look at the guy, Pete used to say that comparison leads to death. That you look at the guy next to you, and actually they're flying in their career, and they've gone places. We get CVs handed in for jobs in Parliament, and they're like 19, and they've done, you know, 7 summer internships and I'm like, I've done nothing, and it can really lead to death. The real danger, and success isn't the danger. I don't mean that in any sense at all. I couldn't believe that less. I really believe, from working in politics, we need people, we need Christians at the top of politics, Mike Buckley, to be successful and to really go for it. And we need people in business. We need people in arts and fashion to change the culture. I really believe that. So that's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that the problem of this is the competition and the comparison thing. And what it does is it makes us cling to our resources. Like if we're in a battle, if we're in a competition with guys who are flying, and we've got to somehow better have a better car or wear nicer suits or move to a better postcode. I don't know what it is, but like, these are just cliched examples, but they can be more subtle than that. But what we do is we start to keep hold of our money, and like we try to add to it, and we try to build it, and we're constantly on this sort of track where progress and being impressive is the main agenda. That's where we get validation, and I really think that that's not scriptural, and I think that that's not what God is asking us to do. And I would just say that, you know, let's watch out for that in our life, because that's the me bit, that's the agenda bit that I was talking about earlier, where I really believe thanksgiving will break that down. If we begin to offer stuff up, if they're gifts, they're not ours to cling to. There's a passage in Acts that excites me, and I'm coming towards the end. There's a passage in Acts that excites me as much as any other in the New Testament, and it's this, it's from Acts 2. Acts 2, this is verses 44 to 47, but it's great all the way through. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day, they continued to meet together in temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. I flipping love that passage. To me, that describes a community of thanksgiving. A community that's founded on thanksgiving. A community that knows what God has done in their life, knows that God will provide for them going forward, know that their possessions aren't theirs to cling to, but to give away. To give away as anyone had need. It's a community that sees the needs of others above their own. And I believe that that's, you know, it says there that you know, with basically nothing, They ate together with glad and sincere hearts. What's really interesting is that the Greek word for thanksgiving is eucharisteia. And The middle bit is charis, which means grace. Grace means receiving gifts you don't deserve. So it's founded on grace, which is gifts, acknowledging gifts. Then within it is contained a derivative of that, which is kara, which is joy. And so thanksgiving in the Bible is a word that is founded on God's gifts, essentially, that leads to joy. And I don't know about you, but when I read that passage, I think that sounds like a community where there's joy. And I want to be part of a community, and I want to contribute to a community in a way that is like that. That's the culture, I think, that I'd love, you know, I'd love to see more of it. I'd love to see more of right across the church. And this is the end. The thanksgiving, it defeats the me part, and it turns us outwards. It turns us outward focused. That's what's happened in Acts there. And I really believe that this is how we'll be released into the vision of this church more fully, is because we'll be outward focused. Instead of seeing our own needs and how we need to build our kingdom, we'll see how we need to build God's kingdom. And we'll begin to see the need around here in King's Cross completely differently. There's a lyric that a band called Starfield wrote. This is like when I was 16 and like, stuff. But it's an amazing lyric, and it says this: "Let us not be blinded by privilege, but give us eyes to see the pain. Let us not be blinded by privilege, but give us eyes to see the pain." I really believe that thanksgiving will give us those eyes to see the people that are around us in need. I would just ask, are you clinging tightly to the things you've got, if you're honest? And I've just been through about a pretty brutal 4 or 5 months of this, where I really was clinging to my stuff, and God has led us through a circumstance where, you know, we got to a point of basically having one more month's money, and then we're out of here. Like, we just didn't have it. And, you know, if I'm honest, the bit of money that we did have was what my grandma left to me when she died. And I put that off limits. I said, God, because we were moving into King's Cross, we really felt we should be here. And I just couldn't do the maths, like, this just wasn't possible, but we really felt we were here. And my wife amazingly just said, "Do you believe God is coming here? Are you meant to be here?" And I said, "Yes." "Do you believe he's faithful?" "Yes." "Well, what's there to worry about?" Which is amazing. But it was painful. It was a brutal couple of months where I saw that money going. Just saw it dwindling down to the point where we had 1 month left. And then, amazingly, Anna got this job, and it can be painful, but are you clinging to your possessions, or are you ready to give them away? Are you ready to give them away?